to network and interact with others, if that is your skill set, if that's the gold you bring to the world, there is tremendous value for you in the right firm if you resonate with the person.
The Apartment Gurus podcast is brought to you by Greenlight Equity Group, an apartment acquisitions and holdings firm co-founded by Carl York and Tate Seymour, host of this show. We offer you the opportunity to be an owner of cash-flowing, wealth-growing apartments without the headaches of being a landlord. These assets are recession-resistant, risk-mitigated, offer significant tax advantages, and are a great alternative to the stock market. Ready to check it out? Go to www.investwithgreenlight.com today to book a personal consultation with Carl or Tate. Again, that's investwithgreenlight.com. We look forward to meeting you. Welcome to The Apartment Gurus, where twice a week, host Tate Seymour brings you deep dive interviews with the wisest gurus in the apartment investing industry. These experts are sure to create game-changing value and inspiration designed to catapult your business to the next level. Be sure to reach out to Tate at www.investwithgreenlight.com for access to his investor portal and Calendly link. And now, here is Tate Seymour and the Apartment Gurus.
Welcome, everybody, back. Another episode of the Apartment Gurus podcast coming at you right now. The twist here on this show is that the guest is the guru, not necessarily the host. The host would like to think that he is a guru in the making, but I think we're all gurus in the making as we grow and gain knowledge and wisdom and experience. Like, that's what makes a guru. So if you're on that path, and if you're on the entrepreneurial path and you get to a certain level of mastery with it and you get to a certain level of experience with it, like, and you can mentor other people and coach other people, like, you're starting to get into that guru space. So I'm really excited about today's guest. Jamie Gruber is with us today. And Jamie is a multifamily investor and works with a group called Quantum Capital, or you partnered with Quantum Capital. And before that, Jamie purchased 41 units by himself, and then he sold all of them except for one 16-unit building. And since joining Quantum Capital, which is based out of LA, they have purchased 7 buildings in Denver and LA and Austin, and are currently about to close an 8th deal. And Jamie heads up their investor relations, the investor relations side of their business. So, and look, investor relations, guys, is aside from deal sourcing, deal finding, getting deals, investor relations and that game is aspect of the business is probably the biggest, most important aspect of the business. If you're in real estate, you're raising capital at some level. So a big time capital raiser like Jamie on is awesome. Jamie, welcome to the show, man. Super, super glad to have you.
Great to be here. I appreciate you having me on. This is I enjoy talking about this stuff, so this will be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Jamie's working out of his new studio in the Dominican Republic of all places. So
hot too. Yeah. Hot outside.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like, Jamie has embraced this location freedom aspect of the entrepreneurial life and is working remotely from the Dominican for, you said, a couple years, right?
Year, maybe two. We're taking it year by year.
Yeah, you're making it happen down there. And have you found, let me just ask you before, I want you to share with us a little more about your background and backstory, but I want to ask you about this first. Have you found that, is there any part of your business, any part of your workload that either you can't do from remote like that or a little more challenging?
No, I think everything that I've done and everything that I would recommend anybody do that's looking to pivot their life, quit a job, dive into entrepreneurship, become an investor full time or whatever, is make sure that you start with your lifestyle design. So for me, my family and I had a vision, a dream of being able to live 3 months at a time in any location. Mm-hmm. We're doing it a little longer than 3 months, but it started with that. And everything I've designed from that point forward have aligned with us being able to do at least 3 months.
So you have your whole family there, huh?
Wife, kids. Yep. Yep. Yeah. 7 and 4-year-old boys, the whole nine. Yeah.
Wow. That's fun.
Blew the dogs down.
The dogs. What a great experience for them. Got to be so fun for you guys. And look, that's kind of living the dream, right? Like, Sounds like you have a lot of time freedom, my guess. Certainly location freedom. And like Jamie said, big takeaway right out of the gate there, Jamie. You're dropping bombs right away. Start with lifestyle design.
Yeah.
You know, like, why not? If you're going to create a new life and quit your W-2 or do, you know, whatever this transition looks like for you, start with your vision, man. Start with the life that you want to live that's going to fire you up and make you excited to wake up every morning. If you don't have that now, like, it's really a matter of creating it first. Like, sit down and write it out. Get the book Vivid Vision. You know, it's something I mention on the show a lot, but that book changed our business massively at Greenlight, my company. And it's basically, it's a short read. It's a guide on how to construct a 3-year vision for your life as you want it to go. And you can do a personal vivid vision. You can do a business vivid vision. You can combine the two. We did a company level vivid vision. And that's the first part of, if you believe in things like the law of attraction and manifesting and stuff like that, that's the first part of the process is identifying the goal, right? Identifying where you want to get.
So I'll show you right here if you can see it.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. It was
personal 3-year vivid vision.
There you go. So we have this
for my business, but it is meaty.
Detailed. Yeah. I mean, look, and your vivid vision when you're done with it is, it looked like yours was probably 6-8 pages there at least. And it takes the place of your mission statement and your vision statement. And really, it's like that, those two things on steroids. Like, you're going in and you're talking about every part of your life, your physical life, your recreational life, your family life, your financial life, your business life, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're doing one for your business, you're talking about all aspects of your business, your core values, your mission, your strategies, your criteria, your team, your, with the vivid vision process, you're writing it from a 3-year retro perspective. So did you do that, Jamie?
This is a topic I love. To your point, I've got 8 gardens of life that I wrote my vision in, right? My environment, my health and fitness, my family, my friends, my relationships, my finances and investment, my career, my lifestyle and adventure, my personal development, and my contribution or spiritual life, right?
Oh, I love that.
What I have on the first page is what I call a definite chief aim by garden. So this is just like a bullet. Like, this is like the, okay, what's the genesis or the gist of that vision in that area? Because there's a lot to read here. But the rest of this is written as a retrospective to your point. Like, it's 2023, it's 2026, and this is what's happened in my life, as opposed to I'm wishing this happened. I believe fully, when you create a vision, you should do it for yourself first, not for like my family's going to do that or whatever. You have to do it for you. You have to keep the how out of it. So you can't have like, I'm going to do it by doing this. A vision should be a little bit more high level. This is what I'm going to achieve, the outcomes I'm going to achieve. Then you can get into that later. And then thirdly, you have to write it as if it's already happened. Those are my 3 rules for a vision.
There you go. I mean, that's a great little crash course in constructing powerful visions for you that serve you and serve your business and propel things forward in the direction that you want to go. And look, you know, Jamie's living proof. Here we are right on the Apartment Gurus podcast. Jamie's proof of what's possible, right? And I love having people that are living their best life. I love having you guys on the show. Like, it's delicious to be in the space of somebody that is creating their dreams and doing so intentionally and with vision, right? Like, so give us a little background. We were talking off, well, you're based in Michigan now when you're not in exotic parts of the world. So kind of like, where are you from originally in terms of your professional background? Like, what have you done? And then your real estate story. I'd love to hear all that.
Yeah. So I'm a native New Yorker, grew up all over New York, Long Island, and then upstate for those that are from that part of the country. At a certain point, around the age of 30, I moved to Boston. I lived there for 8 or 9 years, met my wife there. We had our first kid there. And then my career took me to Michigan. So at 21 years old, I took a job as a claims adjuster with Progressive Insurance. You've heard of big insurance company.
Sure. Yep.
And I moved up the ranks pretty quickly. I was good at it, became like a supervisor, moved in Boston to become a manager. And then I was all in on, I want to be an executive. I want the equity. I want the bonus. I want the whole package. I want the big team. I want that level, the executive level. So I just started doing everything I could within my role to be eligible for an executive position. So, hey, Jamie, go take this lateral position where you're on the plane 45 weeks a year while your first son is less than a year old.
Wow.
No problem. Hey, take this other position where we don't even know if that department's going to stay in place. And if we do get rid of it, we can't even guarantee you your job. Sure, I'll take that. Whatever it took for me to become an executive. I sort of sold out on the objective of getting to that level. And I applied everywhere, not getting it and not getting it and not getting it 6-7 times before I finally got the position in Michigan to run the claims department in that state. And within about 30 days of getting that job, after all of the fun and the, wow, I finally did it, wore off, there was this complete emptiness in me, this hollow feeling of unfulfillment that I mark it as now, but didn't know, realize it was that at the time. But I just put my head down and went after a job thinking that the position would give me and validate for me all of what I wanted out of my life, right? The income, the equity, the retirement, the whole nine. Yeah. And I realized, like, man, for years, while I had my head down and I was grinding through, I was fighting against a force in me that was drawing me toward another type of life, something that was a bit more authentically me than the role that I was in. So that's where I found real estate. I was in sort of this place of being broken. And at the time I had a single family home that was sort of an accidental landlord situation. It was New York, 2005 purchase, moved to Boston in 2008, couldn't sell the house, right? And I kept it and I had to rent it out and I just had the house. And I thought, you know what? This real estate thing is interesting. What if I actually think about that house as less of an albatross and more of an investment? And I converted it to that in my brain on paper. I converted it to an investment. And then I started looking at BRRRR deals, right? Like a single family or a duplex that you could rehab and refinance. So I bought two duplexes, distressed in upstate New York.
Did you house hack those? Did you?
No, this was 2017. So I lived in Boston. We actually had put the properties under contract. I think it was like November or December. January, I got offered the position to move to Michigan. And the last order of business I had was to go close on those two properties, distressed properties from the MLS, and then move to Michigan. So didn't plan on it initially, but I found them on the MLS from just an owner that was trying to move to Florida.
Nice.
So from that point, honestly, like it was kind of a revelation of like, wow, you know what? It's kind of hard to close on two properties, two tax bills, two rehabs, two everything, right? It just felt like a lot for four units. And I started to get this idea of multifamily, but it felt big and scary and, you know, like, oh my God, 20 units or 15 or whatever. That's an apartment building. How am I going to buy an apartment building, right?
Right.
I joined this community at the time called GoBundance. It's a high net worth men's mastermind group. And most of the people in there are real estate investors. And I did that because they are doing what I wanted to do. They are who I want to become. And I'm a big believer in proximity. So if I want to be an entrepreneur in the real estate space, may as well get around entrepreneurs in the real estate space to normalize that. So I joined GoBundance and now these guys got me thinking bigger and making 80 unit properties feel normal. So I went about the process of finding smaller multifamily properties, started with a 16 unit. We bought that for $755,000 in Michigan, me and a partner. Later, I ended up buying with another partner a 22 unit property in Cleveland. And then later we were under contract on another 22 unit property when I actually met a friend in GoBundance. His name is Mark Henteman, who's been an investor for 22 years. In fact, what's really cool about Mark, I think, is 1999, he's a writer for David Letterman. He gets fired. He moves across country with an idea for an animated series. The studio's like, we kind of like it, but you should meet this guy, Seth MacFarlane. He's got a show that maybe you guys could work on together. So Mark writes the first script for Family Guy with Seth MacFarlane. Gets his script checks and he says, man, I got fired by Letterman. I got to do something with this money where this industry is too up and down. He buys a property in LA, a duplex in the middle of LA. He rents half of it to the guy that does the voice for Cleveland. That's his first tenant. And it triples in value in the next 3 years. And oh, by the way, 22 years later, still an Emmy nominated writer for Family Guy, right? So he's had this career while he gets hooked on real estate, trades that duplex for a 12 and a 10 unit, and then just goes from there, from the early 2000s all the way up. And at about 6-7 years ago, got really serious about raising capital more aggressively, syndicating and scaling his portfolio, which is Quantum Capital. So when I met Mark, I had this 22 unit under contract. I had my portfolio of 41, 42 units or whatever it was. And he says, hey man, you're a great connector because that's my space in real estate. Like I'm not the underwriter. I'm not the operator. I'm not an asset manager. I don't love that. And I know a lot of your audience is single family going to multi and I'll speak to this in a moment. But for me, I was like, man, my skill set in real estate, honestly, at a basic level is talking about it and being excited about it. That's what my skill set is in real estate. So it lends really well to marketing, to investor relations, to capital raising. It's not, I can underwrite a deal, but I want to beat my head off the table by the end of it. It's just not how my brain works. So when he said to me, hey, listen, my firm is small. We don't have a marketing presence. You're a great connector. Would you want to come be a general partner and do deals with me? I said, one moment. Went over to the 22 unit that we were about to have to reposition and do all the work on. And we wholesaled it to another buyer and said, it's yours. We're out. I think it was a $15,000 wholesale fee. And I partnered with Mark a year ago. And from that point, you said seven. We actually closed on the 8th. And we just went under contract on the 9th, 2 days ago. So yeah, that's kind of my apartment story as I've grown from single family to syndicator over the last 2-3 years.
Have you met Seth MacFarlane? That's the question that's just been burning in my brain the whole time.
No. But Mark's amazing. Mark is a very like humble, low key guy. Like you read his resume, you think this, he barely knows how to use Zoom, right? He's just this kind of, like, really cool dude, but he tells these stories. Each time he's like, did I ever tell you about the time that, you know, Mila Kunis, this, that, or the other? No.
Oh my gosh.
Did I ever tell you about the time that I directed a scene with The Rock? Like, dude, no. But he's like, oh, I never told you that. He's not doing it. And he's just like, oh, I forgot. I guess I didn't tell you that. He's just the most down to earth guy. So no, I haven't met any celebrities yet. But we are talking about doing a quantum conference, Quantum Con, at some point, and we'll see if we can leverage some celebrity connections that he has for that.
Well, you know, dude, I think you ought to pitch yourself to him for like voiceover work. You've got that professional mic you're working with
today. Radio voice. Yeah.
It makes you sound really good, Jamie. Like, good stuff, man.
So in GoBundance, we do something called a one sheet, which is like tracking of everything and then your goals. And we have bucket list things on there. One of my bucket list items has been to get an IMDb credit for a major motion picture. Not just any credit. I want it for a major motion picture. Interestingly, Mark wrote, Seth MacFarlane asked Mark to write the reboot of The Naked Gun a year ago. It just got greenlit this weekend by Paramount.
Wow.
It's in Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. You can go look it up. Liam Neeson will be Frank Drebin, and I'm trying like hell to get my IMDb credit. I just want to like pop into a scene and go like, no way. And then Melanie, just that one scene. I told him, like, if you need a Dr. Evil, Mini-Me kind of mix, that's me. I'm your guy. Whatever you need.
That's great. That's great, man. Well, there's a lot of, great questions that I have, I think, for you about the capital raising game and the relationship game in particular in this space. And for listeners, like, we say this all the time, and Jamie's the perfect guest for this show because we talk about how this is a long-term relational game in the multifamily commercial space. Like, that's just how the big players work. If you're an elite, you know, what my friend Bo Beery calls an elite investor, you're somebody that you're doing multiple deals over and over again with the same broker because you've gotten the reputation now with that broker of being able to close deals and getting them done. And they're bringing you deal after deal after deal. That's an example of the kind of long-term relational game that you want to play in this space. So when it comes to investors, this is really like the whole relationship. Your approach to this relationship is, this is somebody that I am going to do business with for hopefully decades. And we're going to make a lot of money together. They're going to make a lot of money. I'm going to make a lot of money. I want to build a lot of trust with them. I want to know them personally.
Yeah.
I want to be in their world. And so that's your approach, right? So what that produces is the kinds of questions and conversations that evolve around things like, what do you do for fun? Like, you're in the Dominican Republic. Like, what, dude? That sounds exotic and amazing to me. Like, what do you guys do there? What is your 7-year-old into? And you remember that stuff, right? Because that's the stuff that really matters to whoever you're talking to. And so if you can remember, like in this case, if Jamie's my investor and I haven't talked to him in a month or 3 months, and I'm checking in with him on a quarterly, monthly basis, first thing I bring up is like, Jamie, how are the kids? 7 and 4, I'm sure they're keeping you busy, right? Like, that's how you bond with people. That's how you create connection and bond. And so it sounds like you're just incredibly good at that side of things, Jamie.
Yeah, I think to make sure I clear up the story on the job, I ended up quitting the job about 2 years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago at this point. And keep in mind, this was a $300,000-$400,000 a year job. I had a few hundred thousand in equity that was unvested, some that vested, but some that was unvested. And I walked away from it all for, you know, what I'm doing with Quantum and some other projects that I do. But I've always said to people who are in that space, especially like middle age, high income, maybe talking about this real estate thing, looking for their exit, or maybe they've started down the path and they're like, I did, like, wow, you know, these two duplexes, a lot of work. I'd love to get 10 or 20 or 30 units all at once. The beauty of commercial real estate investing, and I say commercial from a funding perspective, right? A multifamily property is residential, but it's a commercial asset from a lending standpoint, is the power of team. And the ability to bring specific skills to it. So I always say this, there are three specific, I don't know, gifts or personality types or ways of being that add tremendous value in the multifamily investing space, I think. And the more you understand that these have value and identify with the one that you are and lean into that, the more you can scale and grow by partnering with people that either need that skill, well, that need that skill set in their business. So those three.
Yeah.
First, you have the analyzer, right? This is your engineer, right? Oh man, right. I could be in a spreadsheet all day, and I could even be in that spreadsheet. Like, I get excited about changing the formulas in it and making sure that I make it as efficient as possible. Yeah. And then when you go home at the end of the day, you're going to go on Edmunds.com and research the hell out of the next car you're going to buy. Like, you just love doing that stuff. That's an analyzer. Tremendous, tremendous value to somebody like me, who's not an analyzer. If I had a multifamily acquisition firm with 100 or 150 million in assets under management, and I needed somebody to fill that skill set, whether you have the experience or not in multifamily, that skill set has value. So analyzer is one. The second is the integrator. So the integrator is like the field general, the person who can see when you say, hey, I want to have 200 million in assets next year that I acquire or whatever, right? Like, that's that big vision. The integrator can say, okay, I know the exact steps where the soldiers need to be. I can line up the battlefield to knock that down. That follow through person, that disc D or red or whatever, right? But that person who's going to take the damn hill no matter what and integrate the vision into reality, that is probably the most difficult skill set to find. So anybody listening that has that, know that you are sitting on gold when it comes to the ability to find partners, which is, to me, the game in multifamily investing. And then the third, and this is me, is the connector. The connector is somebody who can go into a room of people, talk to everybody, and when they go home, they're going to get on the phone and talk to their friends, right? Like, I do that all day. I can analyze deals. Again, I want to kill myself after that,
right?
Or whatever. But when it comes to interacting with others and networking and doing things like podcasts all day, I get energy from it. Tremendous skill set in going into a firm and saying, hey, I can help you with marketing. I'm loud on social. I bring out broadcast deals. I have a lot of friends that I bring in. I'm passionate about the topic. I bring people together. Like you said, what my gift is I remember stories. It's like, oh, I know this guy's story too really well. Let me bring you two together and this gal, her story. Wow, you two should come together. That skill set's very valuable just generally. And it plugs in really nicely to a multifamily acquisition firm. So you're spot on. When you have the ability to network and interact with others, if that is your skill set, if that's the gold you bring to the world, there is tremendous value for you in the right firm if you resonate with the person. Whether you're partnering with somebody as a general partner like I did, or you're partnering as a limited partner who's going to invest with me, it's not about the returns that I'm going to provide or that you're going to provide. It's not about the structure of the deal. It's not about the waterfalls. It's not about any of that complex stuff. It's KLT. Do I know? Do I like? Do I trust you? That's it. When it comes to that skill of being able to build that, know, like, and trust. You got to be trustworthy.
Yeah,
you can make a lot of money, but maybe more importantly, you'll see a lot of people make a lot of money, which means you'll make a lot of money.
Yeah. I've sat in an interesting debate before about which of the know, like, and trust is the most important.
Mm.
And it's an interesting thing to think about, but a lot of people will say trust. And I would agree that's obviously, I think that's the final most important thing. But knowing is, they got to know you first.
Yeah.
And so that's why these things like social media, LinkedIn, is so key right now, and marketing to your sphere of influence and letting everybody know what you're doing. Like, that knowledge of Jamie's a player in this space. He's got opportunities for great passive investors, great opportunities for passive investors to step up into and do very well and hedge against inflation and mitigate risk and et cetera, tax advantages. And so Jamie's the kind of person it sounds like you're kind of naturally wired for just being a people person and being, you know, super interactive. But at the same time, like, you're very, very visible, right? That's the beauty of social media these days, is how visible you can be. And LinkedIn, again, I've said it on other episodes, other shows, but LinkedIn is happening. Like, it is vibrant. People are really investing a lot of their time there, a lot of their energy. There's tons of great value add in that space. And look, if you're doing a multifamily deal in Louisville, Kentucky, and you need an equity piece, or you need 1031 exchange money, or whatever it is you need, get on LinkedIn. Do a search on commercial multifamily investor, or limited partner equity, or preferred equity, or whatever. Do some keyword searches. It is unbelievable the amount of resources there are on LinkedIn.
Yeah. It kills me a bit when I hear, because I think you are, I agree with everything you said, but I think some folks in the audience or anywhere generally start to fall off with, like, nah, social media. Like, I'm not a social media person, right? I hear that. Yeah. Why would I share my omelets on Instagram? Who cares? Like, it's so stupid. But here's the thing. If you're at a job, especially, right? There's something that you do when you want a raise, when you want a promotion, or when you want to get anything done at that job, right? There's something you need and that you go for. And that's attention, right? You need attention. Your boss needs to know what you're doing, right? So I hear from so many people that I hate what I do. My boss is a jerk and I want to go do this thing, but I don't want to do this personal branding stuff and social media and yada, yada, yada. And it kills me because it's like, well, all right, you're willing to dance and get the attention of somebody you don't like in a position that doesn't fulfill you. You'll do that to get 2% or a 5% bump in pay if you get that promotion. But you're unwilling to go out and add value to folks out there that could hear and learn from you because you have knowledge, you have value to give on this free platform, any one of them, LinkedIn, you name it, on these free platforms to provide some level of value. And by doing so, become known, become liked, and become trusted, and generate capital, generate partnerships, generate whatever it might be for you to have the life that you do want. It blows my mind. The second thing is, I think people lose sight of the fact that social media has a word in it that we don't think about. It's social. So even if you don't want to make a bunch of reels every day, or you don't want to go on LinkedIn and give your tip of the day or whatever it might be, you going on to these platforms to be interactive, to engage in the right Facebook group with the right hashtags and Instagram, keyword searches in LinkedIn, and interacting with people in the space you want to be in, and adding value that way as a social person in these platforms, equally can do a ton for you in terms of raising capital and finding partners and all of that stuff. So I completely agree with everything you said. Like, attention is monetizable. Attention is profitable. Attention gets you to move to the Dominican Republic. Right? So you have to generate that. And I think there's hypocrisy, just calling it out. There's hypocrisy in the idea that I wouldn't do that when I know you do in every other area of life. If I want my wife to go to the right restaurant that I want to go to or do anything with me, like, I'm going to figure out a way to get her attention with that. My boss, who I don't like, I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm not willing to get attention for what I've learned, the knowledge I've acquired, the skills I have, and put that out into the marketplace. Doesn't make sense.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You're already jumping through hoops professionally. I mean, any job and any business for that matter has things about it that you may or may not like to do, right? Like, I don't know anybody that likes every single aspect of their job, their career, their business. Like, the bottom line is, eventually, like, you build a good business and a powerful enough business, you can design it so that you do love every part of your job. But in the meantime, if you're at a W-2 grinding away and making somebody else rich, but you're not willing to get on LinkedIn and make yourself rich, like, I think that needs to be looked at. I think that's an awesome point, Jamie.
Yeah. Partnership is key here too. The first business I've had, a multifamily networking platform, that's how we acquired our first couple of deals. My partner is the biggest introvert in the world. Like, he is quite, like, sometimes, like, are you happy? I can't tell. Like, you're barely smiling. Like, what's going on here? Right. He partnered with me to leverage my desire and ability to be social and out front. And I absolutely, when I got that offer with Quantum Capital to come partner with him, my first thing was, can I bring my partner? because he's the back end to my front end, right? Like, so the attention that I garner, because it's a natural skill and something I do enjoy, got us the opportunity with Quantum, and he's able to come along. And then once we're in Quantum, the systems and processes around marketing, they're not being built by me, they're being built by him, right? So he brings that value to me. So we complement each other. And if you're just sitting there saying, Jamie, that analyzer thing makes sense, that's me, I could analyze all day, then you lost me at social. You lost me at social media. And like you were saying, sometimes you got to do things you don't want to do. And you're still like, I don't know about that. Then find that person like me, look at me type of personality. Right. Partner with that person, leverage their attention, and they can leverage your attention to detail. So I think partnerships are a key all around in the multifamily space. And that's just one example of it.
Yeah. Team sport. We talk about it a lot. So what are you finding these days that investors are, what's really important to the retail investor these days, the typical limited partner in a deal? And what do you do to kind of meet those needs?
It's funny. There's such a split here. There's like, it's almost in thirds. So there's a third of the population that is interested in cash flow. That's what they want. They want reliable cash flow to free them from their job or whatever. There's a third of the population, maybe a little bit more than a third, that is just looking for maximum return on their dollar. Like, I don't need cash flow upfront consistently. I need it to build toward and get me to a point where I have X return. And then there's a third of the market that's looking for tax benefits. Like, I'm going to get crushed this year if I don't place capital, especially this year, 2022, with bonus appreciation at 100% expiring at the end of this year. A lot of people want to get in on that. And by the way, there's a recession happening, so bad timing to get in on the last year of 100% bonus. But we did get a deal under contract. I can tell you how if you want to in a little bit. So, or two deals, actually. We closed one. We have one more under contract in this recession. I can explain those strategies. So the person that wants cash flow, how we serve that, typically what we do is we structure a limited amount of what we call A-class shares on a deal. So depending on who's listening, if you're somebody who's like trying to get into a small multi and now you're going to hear all these syndication terms, I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. So you've got two different kinds of shares, A and B, right? So I want to invest 50 grand. So 50 grand under an A share looks like this. I'm going to give you $50,000 to invest for me, Quantum Capital. And for that 50,000, I hold 50,000 in equity. So I'm going to get a K-1 at the end of the year. I hold equity. But I'm going to forego any upside, meaning my 50K at the end, I'm going to get it back because you're going to give me 8 or 10% consistently starting one quarter after you close. I'm going to be at the top of the... So you pay your debt and then you pay me, the A share investor. So that's a person who's saying, I need to make cash flow now. Like, we have that for them. The B class or the B share investor is somebody who says, yeah, hey, I got 50 grand. I want equity, which you'll get, but I want that 50 grand to turn into 100 grand. And yeah, I do want cash flow along the way, but I understand you've got to make that building better. So initially I might only get a few percentage points in the first, you know, 3, 6, 9 months, and then it'll build toward a larger return annually. I'd rather maximize the amount of money I can get with this 50 grand. That's the B share investor. And some people split their money between that. I'll do 25 here, 25 there, or 50 and 50, or 75, 25. You can do that. But that's how we service both of those investors. The tax part is built in, right? Like, you're going to get a K-1. We're going to cost segregate, which means we're going to accelerate depreciation and compress it. And with bonus depreciation, you could take it all in the same year. So for investors that are non-W-2 real estate professionals with passive income that they want to try to eliminate so they don't pay taxes, the strategy is there. You're going to get maybe up to half of your initial investment is going to be written off for you in year one so that you can write that off your tax bill at the end of the year. So those are kind of the three different investor types that I find when I talk to folks.
Yeah. The great thing is a good deal is going to produce all three of those things, right? Cash flow, growth, and tax advantages. And so by virtue of doing good deals, you are meeting those needs. And hopefully uncontrollables go well. But if you've underwritten the uncontrollables conservatively, then your investors should do very nicely and get nice returns. So do you have any tips as far as like communication goes? How often do you talk to your folks and gifts, other points of contact?
Yeah. So we have an investor list. We service them on a monthly basis with a newsletter and a weekly basis with other content that we create, blog posts, information, updates on what's going on. Every quarter, we update them with quarterly what's happening. And we're starting to do webinars as well for folks on a quarterly basis. Like, hey, here's the status of the portfolio. Here's the questions you need answered and that sort of thing. As far as one-to-one, we don't make one-on-one calls. We're getting too large an investor base right now for the bandwidth to make those calls. So we really stepped up the marketing efforts around social so that we're present and visible and sharing as much content as we possibly can broadly. So when I first joined, we had a couple hundred people on the email list. That's expanded exponentially. And so for partners that we have, we're always available. And some partners that have invested significant capital, we do jump on a call with them every quarter and just talk through and answer their questions, and we're visible for them. But for most investors, they'll get touched through our social media platforms, through the content we create, which we think is on point with what they need, our monthly newsletter and other content that we put out, and then the quarterly webinars that we're starting to do.
I like the quarterly webinar idea. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Really good.
Just to get visible. If somebody wants to join, they can. If not, hey, here's the recording and they get a touch. Because you said it before, there's a stat out there that it takes about 6 interactions with somebody to truly know, like, and trust them enough to do business with them, invest, partner, whatever. And just look at it like a math equation. Like, if I'm going to meet you once a month, it's going to take me 6 months, if you show up every month, for us to maybe get to the point of establishing enough trust. But if you see me and hear from me, and I tell you the good and the bad, it's not like I'm not shining turds, right? If I'm saying, hey, this is challenging, this actually, we're unsure on this, or no, this is going really well, we're actually really happy with what's going on right now. If you're hearing from me frequently, that 6 touches, if it's that, gets compressed exponentially, and you get a feel for the person through the outlets and the media that we put out for each of our, for our investor base.
Yeah. When you have those, are all of the attendees current investors, or do you invite everyone in your base?
We're just starting it, and it is everybody that's on our investor list.
That's a great, great idea, man. That is an, I've never heard that one before. I just wrote it down for myself. Like, I love it. Great takeaway.
Yeah. An hour, a quarter makes sense, right? To just sort of be available.
Heck yeah. It makes sense. Question. It's another touch. It's another place that you can mention your current deals that you have, current opportunities. That's awesome. Good stuff. What haven't I asked you, Jamie, that you think is an important part of this whole investor relations game that I might have missed in terms of either systems and processes or just kind of overall approach, growing the database, growing your investor list, you know, all that stuff. Any thoughts along those lines?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple. So the first is, I think I really appreciate, and a reason why I partnered with Mark and with Quantum in particular is because we share this value. I'm never getting on a call when somebody's interested in a deal with the idea of trying to get them to invest. My first few calls, I'm trying to add value to this firm. I definitely was like, I'm going to get this investor, right? Like, there was just a natural inclination. And I found, one, it's relieving for me. And two, the approach I take is, how do I add the most value to this individual? So there are calls that I'll jump on open-minded, where people are very interested in what we're doing, but they're also interested in self-storage. And I happen to know some really good self-storage operators. So I have no problem sharing with them, like, hey, if you want to go the self-storage route, research this and this. And if you need a contact, just text me or email me. I'll connect you with their investor relations person. A lot of times, probably most of the time, the person I'm talking to is not seasoned in this. Like, I've heard about investing passively. I'd like to try to do it. I'd like to learn too while doing so. Like, how does it work? And so I just go through and explain, hey, look, if you are an investor that's looking for, this is Quantum, for A class property, like new construction or whatever, we're not your place. Mm-hmm. We invest in B and C class in top end markets, downtown Denver, great markets within Denver, right? We invest in value add, which means our push is more on location, 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 not cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. You're going to get your cash flow. We put things in place to make sure that you get paid before anyone else gets paid. Preferred returns, return of equity, equity splits right at the end of it. So we're going to put all that in place and make sure you get all of that over the life of the hold. But we're more of a long-term investment firm than others. So I'm very clear on that. I don't want to close people. I want to explain what we do. Does that fit with you? No. What else do you need? Oh, you need somebody else? Let me turn you to my friend Brandon Turner with Open Door, or Andrew Cushman with Adapt Capital, right? Like, let me hook you up with somebody that is doing the stuff you want, if that's the way you want to go. So I think from an investor relations standpoint, you have to approach your interactions with potential investors on as value add, because if you want to be tactical about it, that's the long game. Do you know how many more people, and I don't intend this, say to me, like, actually, I just want to invest with you, because I've just been open and transparent. I'm honest about what's good, what's not good, whether this is likely the right thing for you or not, who you should invest with.
Yeah.
Talk about know, like, and trust, right? Like, more trust being open and transparent than you do if you are trying to close people. So that's a big component of investor relations. The other thing I would say is you have to understand what your company's value proposition is and educate your investor on why that's valuable for you, not for them, but for you. So they understand what your philosophy is. So let me give you this example. A friend of mine, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, got into his first syndication, raising capital for a deal in Alabama. And I remember hearing the debt terms were like 77% loan to value bridge debt, right? Which is, it's a more aggressive type of funding, right? It's higher leverage and you got to get out of it a little bit faster. And this is 6-8 months ago where you could see the swirl of change, what's coming, right? Like, I remember saying to him, like, man, I don't know, that scares me a bit as an investor, right? Quantum has always been very conservative. We invest in conservative assets with a lot of upside, $300-$400 a month rents. Like, that's what we've always done. And our debt terms are like 65% loan to value, 5-year fixed term, 5-year floating, even up to 10 years floating, like 15 years we could be in this thing, 30-year amortization, right? Like, we're very conservative with our debt terms. So if there's a correction in the market and we somehow find ourselves at the end of a very long term that we have to get out of this property, you know, like, we're going to be okay. And more than that, we can extend the term of the debt so that we can stay in this deal. So any good, I think, operator knows that in a recession, the existing deals, the number one priority is preservation of capital, not return on capital. It's preservation of capital. And when things turn around, then you focus back on return. But you know what? Look, I still think in this recession, multifamily is the best asset, that you will generate a return investing in almost any multifamily. But I think you have to understand what's valuable to you about what you're investing in and then explain that to your person. And if it's for them, doesn't make any sense, that's not your investor. That's okay. Move on. Those are my two investor relations thoughts.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I think that's an awesome way to kind of round things out on this episode. This has been tremendously valuable, Jamie. So listeners, check out jamiegruber.com, jamiegruber.com. You can connect with Jamie there. It's an awesome site, really cool site. Jamie, any other ways of connecting with you? That obviously LinkedIn's going to be a good one. Any other ways that a listener could reach out to you?
Yeah, honestly, I'm very active on Instagram at the Jamie Gruber. And on there, the link in my bio, you can sign up for a free newsletter. It's called The Midlife Entrepreneur, Confessions of a Midlife Entrepreneur. It's a weekly newsletter. It's beefy, it's meaty, but I give you everything. How much was I making before I left? How much did I have saved? What was my passive cash flow? How did I make the decision to do that? And then all the lessons I've learned being a midlife entrepreneur are laid out in that newsletter. So if you want to learn more about, if you're in that space of like, I'm 36 or 42, and I want to do something different with my life, but I'm scared to death and real estate's my avenue, great. Or even if it's not your avenue, go ahead and check out that newsletter, Confessions of a Midlife Entrepreneur.
Perfect. Perfect. There you go, folks. Another value-packed episode of The Apartment Gurus brought to you by Mr. Jamie Gruber. Jamie, thanks a ton, man. This has been very valuable. You're a very clear communicator, inspiring. You make things easy to understand and get your head around. So it seems like you're the perfect fit for what you're doing.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. So, and then listeners, thank you so much. You make this all a joy to be a part of and a joy to produce the show every week, twice a week now. Check us out. Leave us a rating and review. If you feel so inspired and led, it means more to me than you know. And other than that, we will check you on the next episode of the Apartment Gurus podcast. Take care, everybody.
This episode of the Apartment Gurus is being brought to you by Greenlight Equity Group. Greenlight Equity Group acquires and operates cash flowing multifamily assets in progressive metropolitan markets such as Salt Lake City, Idaho, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, and Columbus, Ohio. Greenlight targets consistent solid returns for its investors and a healthy environment for residents by operating high quality, safe, clean, affordable apartment communities. To learn more about Greenlight and to sign up for the investor list, go to www.glequitygroup.com.
This has been The Apartment Gurus with Tate Seymour. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. To contact Tate, go to www.investwithgreenlight.com for access to his investor portal and Calendly link. He loves to hear from you and thanks you for being a valued listener. Just a reminder that you are the guru. See you on the next episode of The Apartment Gurus.